From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters. Life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana, co-author of the book Humans 2.0, Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Perspectives on Transhumanism. So now let's join Hank Hanegraaff and Fuzz Rana in their conversation.
As a Christian, we take the view that human beings are made in God's image and have infinite worth and value. And so on one hand, we want to do whatever we can to promote human flourishing, right? To mitigate pain and suffering when we can. But we also recognize that we want to protect human beings. We want to make sure that we're protecting those people that are marginalized. That would include embryos. But even then, there's also going to be, you know, women that provide eggs for in vitro fertilization that could be exploited as well. So that exploitation is pretty extensive when you start playing out different scenarios. So the Christian worldview is very powerful in the sense that it's not anti-science, it's not anti-technology, but it also puts in place safeguards that ensure that the technology is going to be used in the best possible way. This is something that secular worldviews don't really offer in any way, shape, or form, which is why it's so important, I think, for Christians who are interested in science and technology and medicine to actually think about pursuing careers in things like brain-computer interfaces and in things like gene editing, because they represent a Christian worldview. They're salt and light in an area that desperately needs salt and light. So it's not just enough for us to be informed and engage, you know, but it's also critical that we encourage young people to see this kind of work as part of their calling, right? That they could actually serve God in real ways by being involved in research in gene editing, for example.
That's such a brilliant point. I want to read something that we looked at prior to the podcast. This is about Neuralink. And I want to talk about Elon Musk for a second and Neuralink and brain-computer interface, BCI. And this is something you brought up as well just a few moments ago. But here's what it says in terms of the promo on the website. So Neuralink's website currently claims this: our brain-computer interface is fully implantable, cosmetically invisible, and designed to let you control a computer or mobile device anywhere you go. I mean, that sounds fantastic. What could be the downside to that?
Yeah, well, you know, and again, this is the challenge, is that this technology, like gene editing, can be used for really good purposes, but it could also, you could cross lines very easily and very quickly. And, you know, Elon Musk, to his credit, or to the team at Neuralink's credit, have developed probably a state-of-the-art BCI. This is one of the most exciting and rapidly advancing areas in bioengineering, but he's probably outpaced everybody in terms of what they've been able to create. And so part of the vision is, look, with BCIs, you could implant them into patients who are locked in, that can't communicate, that they can learn to communicate through texting by just simply using their thoughts, or people that are quadriplegic or paraplegic can learn to control exoskeletons and gain movement, or amputees can learn to control robotic prosthetic limbs. So it's going to revolutionize medicine, but people like Elon Musk not only see humanitarian applications, but they see this as the next generation of user interfaces with the electronic devices that are all around us. So instead of a voice command, you just give a thought command. And in fact, Elon Musk is probably, I would call, a reluctant transhumanist, because he's deathly afraid of AI. And he is concerned that we may create these AI systems that actually either subjugate humanity or drive humanity to extinction. And his argument is the only way that we're going to prevent that from happening is if we develop these brain-computer interfaces that allow us to interface our brains with computer systems so that we can now compete with the AI systems that we're creating. And so he's really advocating the creation of a type of human-machine conglomerate or a cyborg of sorts. And that's where many people that are transhumanists see BCI technology going. So it raises a lot of questions, you know, in terms of what are the boundaries for this type of work. But even for BCI technology that's going to be used simply for medical purposes, there are a lot of very serious ethical issues that are starting to emerge. In fact, there's a whole new area of bioethics called neural ethics, where people are just trying to wrestle through the ethical issues with BCI. So, for example, you can, through BCI technology, stimulate certain areas of the brain that will actually arrest the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. And so this very well may factor in the future in how we help people to manage Parkinson's. The problem is that these BCIs actually alter the personality of the patient, right? They actually make the patient consistently less risk averse. So that then raises questions. Is that patient actually giving consent to the second wave of treatments or not? Would they have given maybe a different response without the BCI? Because they're less risk averse, they may be more willing to have a subsequent treatment because of the BCI itself. Or some of the more sophisticated ones are actually using machine algorithms, basically AI technology, to extract user intent from the electrical activity happening in the brain. And they are interpreting that, and then they are affecting some kind of machine hardware or machine software. Well, the problem here is, who's actually making the decision, right? Is it the patient? Is it the BCI? Or is it some kind of collaboration? And would that patient have made that same decision without the BCI? So even in the most pure applications of BCI technology, you know, where you're seeing it as a means to alleviate suffering that people have because of, you know, paralysis or being locked in from a brain injury or because of a loss of limb, there's all kinds of really deep, profound ethical issues. Now what happens when you start thinking about enhancements or using this in a commercial sense, you know, where this becomes a, you know, the primary user interface between humans and electronic devices. And it's really crazy, Hank, because you can actually tether people's brains together with BCIs. So people can now begin to communicate to one another with BCI technology, you know, where you would route the signal, let's say through the internet. I could actually have my brain tethered to somebody else's brain on the other side of the world, and that we could somehow share thoughts, maybe even conjoin our brains together to solve problems. This sounds like science fiction, but, you know, I just did a literature research a couple of days ago, and this area is progressing at a pretty rapid pace. You know, this BCI, you know, connection from brain to brain.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that you do a great job, you and Ken Samples together, as you wrote this book, you do a great job of pointing out that the worldview you bring to this issue makes all the difference in the world. If you believe in substance dualism, that the mind and the brain are not identical, that the mind is metaphysical, the brain is physical, you have a completely different perspective on BCI than you do if you're a materialist.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, and it depends too on your model for how our material and immaterial aspects of our nature interact. You know, I've seen some models that have been advanced by Christian neuroscientists who would say, well, you know, there's the brain, the mind, and the spirit, and maybe we could call the mind and the spirit the soul, but that the brain can influence the mind can influence the brain, the spirit can influence the mind, and hence the brain. So you've got this three-way interaction. And so even in a substance dualist model, right, you still could have these BCIs somehow altering the immaterial aspect of our nature. So I don't know. I mean, maybe that model isn't a valid model, but it raises all kinds of really hard questions about the brain and the mind and how they relate to each other. And, you know, and again, I'm a substance dualist like you, but for many people like Elon Musk, I would dare venture, they're operating in a materialistic framework where the brain is the mind. And so, you know, they would probably not see the complications that we would see with BCI technology. You know, so I can see, you know, legitimate medical uses for it that as a Christian I could be strongly in support of, but there's other applications I really am troubled by.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana. Should we discourage advances in biotechnology and bioengineering that can be used for human enhancement? Or should we take control of our own evolution and usher in a post-human age? Is there another option? Humans 2.0 Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Perspectives on Transhumanism by Dr. Fuzz Rana with Kenneth R. Samples closely examines the new world of human enhancement technologies and transhumanism. To receive your copy of Humans 2.0, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. The Soviet Red Army won the Battle of Stalingrad. It appeared at first the Nazi war machine would secure the victory, but the Soviets battled back from near certain defeat with extraordinary courage and resoluteness to turn the tide of the battle and ultimately the war. The lesson is that both men and material, people and provisions played a critical role. Willingness to fight and munitions in the arsenal were pivotal. Our contemporary battle for truth against anti-Christian secularists raises the stakes above the significance of Stalingrad. CRI likewise needs military partners willing to stand for truth, along with the financial means to accomplish the mission. Stand with us during the key month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches or visit equip.org. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many. The gate is narrow, and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. let's rejoin Bible Answer Man host Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana, in their conversation.
But for many people like Elon Musk, they're operating in a materialistic framework where the brain is the mind. And so they would probably not see the complications that we would see with BCI technology. So I can see legitimate medical uses for it that as a Christian I could be strongly in support of. But there's other applications I really am troubled by, not only from a, you know, in terms of what could be the unintended consequences of the technology, but even in terms of what does it actually do to human identity, you know, particularly as image bearers.
Speak to this issue of, maybe I should say this mythology, I'll let you be the judge, but this idea of uploading your mind to a computer so you can achieve immortality.
Yeah. I personally, because of my worldview, don't think that is ever going to be possible, right? I don't think we're going to be able to actually do something like that. But it doesn't matter so much what I think. What matters is what other people think, right? And so you could very well, if people are convinced that really our brain is who we are, that they would very much look to something like, you know, uploading the essence of who we are into a machine hardware, because that's a way to gain a type of digital immortality, if you will. And so there very well could be a lot of people that find that idea alluring, even if it's not, at the end of the day, technically feasible, whether because of the limitations of the technology or because of, you know, a misunderstanding about the complexity of human beings, you know, and neglecting to take into account our immaterial nature. But, you know, that idea of uploading our mind, let's say, into a machine framework is really intriguing because, in a sense, it's not going to actually give people what they want. It's not going to actually make them immortal, because what they're doing is they're uploading a copy of their brain. They're not uploading their brain into machine framework. And so it's not them that actually is going to live forever, but a copy of themselves. Sure. So I don't think people have thought this through thoroughly, you know, who are advocating that kind of an idea. But, you know, what I've come to appreciate again is it's not so much what's technically reasonable that's important. It's what people think is reasonable. And if people think that something is possible, even if it isn't, they're going to make decisions, critical life decisions, based on what they think is possible versus what the reality is.
Something else you mentioned just a few moments ago was anti-aging technologies, and I'd love you to elaborate on that. I mean, there's a sense in which you can say that there's mythology involved here if you have a Christian worldview, because there are parameters around our age. I mean, I'm almost 75 years old. I had an anti-aging technology. I suppose I had a stem cell transplant. And so my immune system was killed. My blood system was completely destroyed. So the blood system and immune system of another person could take the place of my blood system and my immune system. So you kill through chemotherapy and radiation, you kill your blood system, your immune system, then they graft in stem cells, and the stem cells graft into the bone marrow and produce a new blood system, a new immune system. And so here, lo and behold, I'm still alive. I'm still kicking because of an anti-aging, so to speak, therapy. But the idea that I'm going now, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life from the perspective of my worldview. No matter if I live to 100, I'm still in the fourth quarter of my life. So there are parameters, if you have a Christian worldview, around anti-aging. You are going to die. The death rate is one per person. We're all going to make it. And, you know, the Bible really indicates parameters around age in 80 and 10 years, or by reason of strength, 80. So around 70 to 80 years, maybe 90, 100 on the outliers and so forth. But there are limitations to our age. And maybe there are good reasons that God designed us that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and again, you know, your point about worldview is really critical. And yeah, I would agree with you that, you know, it's not good to live forever, right? At least in a physical form, in the form that we're in right now, right? That this is not our hope. Our hope is in eternity, where we will have resurrected bodies and we will live forever in the presence of our Lord. But there are good reasons why, you know, God limits, you know, I think, life expectancy. And even people that are not holding to a Christian worldview who deliberate about the ethical issues connected to, you know, anti-aging technology have raised all kinds of very real concerns. It literally would change the world that we live in if suddenly people could live for hundreds of years. It would alter the economic system of the world, right? There's a great Christian thinker, Brent Waters, who influenced me in this respect, that it would lead to what he calls a loss of natality. And what he means by that is that we recognize that we have a finite lifetime and that really the future is represented by our children. And even if you don't have children, you recognize that the future is represented by children. And so we are willing to sacrifice and invest our lives in our children's future so that they have maybe a better world to live in than we did, that things would be a little bit easier than it is for us, right? And that sense of natality means that we are outward looking in terms of how we live our lives, that we are less selfish, and that lack of selfishness extends to how we engage other people. And his point is that if you have, you know, this long life expectancy, no longer are you concerned about the welfare of your children. Your children are now a threat to you, right? And you are a threat to them. You're standing in the way because your goal is to live as long as you can, not to have children and see those children successful. And he argues that that actually would lead to a complete breakdown in the way we understand the world, in that people are going to become inherently selfish. We're not going to be concerned about future generations. We're not going to be concerned about one another. That there's a, you know, there's finite resources, and that we're going to be battling for those resources as we seek to live longer and longer. So there's some very real concerns that, you know, ethicists who are secular arrays, who recognize perhaps, you know, unintentionally the wisdom of God's design to limit our life expectancy, right? And with that being gone, again, people are going to pursue, you know, a type of practical immortality. You know, and it's interesting because there's a growing number of medical doctors who are actually arguing that really we should think about aging not as an inevitability, but actually as a disease. And if it's a disease, it means we can treat it. It means we can cure it. And so there are a growing number of medical doctors who are arguing that we really ought to be redirecting most of our research dollars in medicine to anti-aging, not to cardiovascular disease or diabetes or cancer or stroke work, but rather to anti-aging, you know, where the idea would be that if we can solve the aging problem, all these other dominoes fall and we don't have to be worried about them. So there really is this changing mindset among, you know, biomedical researchers about the nature of the aging process. And again, with that comes this idea that people are going to put their hope in this prospect of maybe through medicine living for hundreds of years, you know, towards attaining a practical immortality.
Yeah, that great prologue to the second part of your book, part two, The Ethics of Human Enhancement. And you talk about ethical challenges there, but one of the things that you raise here is the question, should we play God? And, you know, if you have a knee-jerk reaction, you might say, no, of course we shouldn't play God, but you're saying, yes, we should. And there's a reason you say that.
Yeah, well, and it's because we're made in God's image, right? And so because we're made in God's image, we are creators like our God is a creator, that God has made us, if you, in a sense, quote unquote, co-creators, right? He's given us a creative capacity that we are to implement to understand the world, to develop technologies. We are to subdue the earth, to bring it under our control, right? We are to promote human flourishing. We're to care for the planet. We are to use animals appropriately. We're not to abuse them. And so these are all, we're co-creators, we're co-rulers, you know, we are co-stewards with God. And so as a result of that, we have no choice but to play God. And the real issue is, are we trying to take God's place?
Usurp God.
Right. And so what I see with transhumanism is, this is a movement where we're trying to take God's place. I can see using these technologies for medical purposes as we're trying to function in a way that respects the image of God in people and promotes human flourishing.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Humans 2.0, Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Perspectives on Transhumanism by Dr. Fuzz Rana with Kenneth R. Samples. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org.